Welcome to the Oklahoma State University Tactical Fitness and Nutrition Podcast with Drs. Jay Dawes and Jill Joyce. Today we'll be talking about Firehouse Fitness and how to create a culture of health at your department or your station. In this podcast, we'll be speaking with Lieutenant Annette Zapp. Annette is a 16-year veteran of the fire service. Currently, Annette holds the rank of lieutenant at a suburban Chicago fire protection district and operates Fire SQ Fitness, a coaching business dedicated to the physical and mental health and wellness of firefighters worldwide. Okay, so we've got Annette Zapp join us again today, and Annette's going to be talking to us about Firehouse Fitness. First, before we get started, Annette, do you want to remind the listeners kind of about your background a little bit?
Absolutely. I will give you the Cliff Notes version this time. I'm a science nerd that got transplanted into the fire department about 16 years ago, and that's where we are today.
Nice. Very cool. And so right now, like outside of being a professional firefighter, what else do you do?
I am very excited. I own a business that is dedicated to the health and wellness of firefighters. So I specifically contract with fire departments to take care of their health and wellness needs slash concerns.
Great. And that's one of the main reasons we wanted Annette here with us today, is to talk about, you know, some of the challenges that firefighters have with maintaining their fitness level. So I'm sure that we could go on all day about this, but as far as, you know, in summary, what are some things that you see being some of the major obstacles and challenges, and then how do you overcome those?
Well, Jay, I'm kind of disappointed, actually, because I booked us for 8 hours for talking about fitness.
You have time if you do, so.
So to hear that this is going to be a summary is very disappointing, but I will change course. Okay, there's two main issues with firefighter fitness. The first one, which I've only recently identified, but I'm pretty convinced this is a major driver of being an issue, is that firefighters have the send me attitude and the servant heart. And unfortunately, what that means is that they apply other people's oxygen masks before they apply their own. Yeah. And so they're always thinking about other people before they think about themselves. So that's big issue number one. Big issue number two is that the fire service is not the fire service anymore. The fire service is fire, rescue, EMS, dive, hazmat, technical rescue, public education, fire prevention, and Boy Scout tours. And I'm sure there's more that I'm forgetting. Right. And so the fire service never wants to say no to anything. And so we put 10 pounds of poo in a 5-pound bag every single day. And unfortunately, what seems to suffer and get pushed aside is the fitness. So even those firefighters that are super motivated to stay tip-top shape, I would call myself one of those people, it is difficult to find time during the workday to work out, even though it's encouraged.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point too, because and I would probably identify that 100% with a lot of the groups I've worked with in, you know, both fire and police, and even to some extent in the medical professions, like with nurses, you know, people who are caretakers and protectors tend to let themselves go and sacrifice themselves for others. And, you know, again, that's what makes these populations so, you know, unique and really does make them heroes in that way. But again, it's hard to make sure that you don't go down with the ship in the process.
I would definitely agree with that. And the other, I guess, third or tertiary or whatever you want to call it, issue with firefighters is they also believe that they are forged out of steel, superheroes, and they don't realize that their physical fitness is declining. As the years go by, it's declining little by little. And they're looking at themselves in the mirror every single day and they're not seeing it. But again, even as someone who is super motivated to stay in shape, things are declining and faster than they would in a normal civilian, I believe.
Right. So what are some things around like the firehouse that create challenges with maintaining fitness level?
There are most fire departments, I would say, at least in this area, in the suburban Chicago area, most fire departments understand the need for physical fitness, and they also have some sort of equipment available. Having said that, oftentimes it's equipment in a room that's way too small, and whomever planned out that room or that fitness program 10 or 15 years ago invested in, say, three ginormous pieces of equipment, usually leg extension, leg curl, and back extension.
Right. What else do you need?
Right. What else do you need? So that equipment takes up a huge footprint of space, and the firefighters are completely lacking in those things that could be really functional for them, like kettlebells and dumbbells, things like that. The other thing with firefighters is that many of them, although former athletes, are far removed from that. And so they're either training the way they used to train for football or wrestling 25 years ago, or they've been convinced by a previous coach or a chiropractor or something like that, that, you know, you hurt your back deadlifting, so you should never deadlift again. Right. So then they're completely afraid. So lack of space, lack of education. And the other thing that I see as an issue is in the fire service, we're really big on collecting data. We collect data on everything and we do nothing with it. And so almost 20 years ago, the fire chiefs and the International Firefighter Union came up with what's known as the ACE Wellness and Fitness Initiative. And there was a whole list of points that the Wellness and Fitness Initiative was supposed to hit. Some of them are awesome, such as you get a medical physical every year, you get a fitness test every year. We're going to have peer fitness trainers available at the department to help you with your physical fitness. And it goes on and on and on. But one of those points that's never addressed is that there's going to be a subject matter expert available to administer the program. Very few departments ever made that step. And so the Wellness and Fitness Initiative, in my opinion, is a little bit dead in the water. Firefighters need resources.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that's one of the things that we're excited about is hopefully helping get people in place to do that and provide those resources. And, you know, it's interesting in that you were talking about with the different types of exercise equipment. So, you know, the proverbial leg extension, leg curl, and, you know, back extension. I think that's the other thing is like when planning out a facility for firefighters in general, I mean, typically, you don't necessarily have a lot of space. Certainly, there's a lot of variance in that, depending on the station and the, you know, finances that go along with that. But this is maybe a shot for you to say, hey, if you have a smaller fire station, you know, what are some equipment that's going to get you the most bang for your buck and serve the most good for the most people?
That's a great question. And it's funny, I actually presented at a firehouse industry conference almost a year ago about this exact topic. But one of the issues that happens in the fire service is that we fail to plan things in the right order. So in other words, we're building a new station. We know we need a fitness room. We're going to put it on the blueprint and figure it out later. Mm-hmm. So we put it on the blueprint as 1200 square feet or whatever. And it eventually gets cut down to 500 square feet.
Right.
The station is built, and then the fitness committee, and I hope you hear me saying fitness committee with my finger quotes right now, the fitness committee gets together and they fight over what they want to put in there. So the guys that run marathons, of course, want Woodway treadmills. Sure. The guys that are strongmen want their various equipment. And so nobody gets what they want, and they have a tiny little fitness room. So if you have that tiny little fitness room already, what I would recommend for you, a concept two rower, because you can tip it up against the wall and then you can take it somewhere else to use it. Bands are a great thing. A pull-up bar is amazing. Dumbbells and kettlebells and those kind of things can be stored against the wall. Sandbags, all of those things can be stored against the wall and out of the way. Foam rollers, just little things that aren't going to cost you a fortune. But if you're building a new fire station, minimum blueprint area should be 900 square feet. Minimum. Don't let it go smaller. But before you even start building, get your fitness committee together and have them decide what's going to go in that room.
Right on. So basically, at this point, if the horse is out of the barn, portable and affordable.
Oh my gosh, portable and affordable, and get rid of the leg press and leg extension. Leg curl.
Fair enough. So another interesting thing that you kind of brought up earlier was looking at, you know, deadlifts and, you know, they've gone, and because, you know, I've ran into several, you know, situations in the past where, you know, somebody has a knee surgery and the doctor said, well, you're never going to be able to squat again. Well, I mean, just to get up out of a chair, you're squatting. So I think contextually, to put it in perspective, they're saying, okay, you probably don't need to be going for PRs all the time. But, you know, and you brought up the comment about deadlifting, you know, as part of, you know, occupational performance, like I reckon that firefighters have to lift things up off the ground on a pretty regular basis. So I think that the challenge with that is like, now you're getting deconditioned in the movement patterns that you actually need to be doing. So, I mean, I guess with that space, it's a little bit challenging because you don't ever want to necessarily challenge somebody's physician and not give them confidence in that. But at the same time, you know, again, from a movement standpoint and a training standpoint, we do know that they need to have certain things, especially if they're going to do it. How do you address those issues?
I tell everyone, in order to human properly, you need to be able to hinge and squat, push, pull, and carry heavy stuff. You can't be a human without doing that. And so, unfortunately, physicians, physical therapists, even massage therapists have put these thought viruses in our head that have made us think that we are fragile. We are not fragile. We are tough. And even though we feel like our hips are crooked and our SI joint is out, finger quotes again, we're not fragile. We're completely tough and we're completely resilient. And honestly, if you cannot deadlift, you cannot do the job. Mm-hmm. And just kind of sending that message helps people. But the other thing, and maybe we should have talked about this earlier, but the other thing that I found is simply getting people to foam roll and do some movement patterns in the morning before they start the day has been huge for us at our department in decreasing injuries. So just getting foam rolling, moving, boom.
Right. Well, and I think that's thing for, you know, for the listeners too, so they have an understanding. It's like when we're talking about deadlifting and squatting and stuff like that, I think a lot of times people have a connotation or, you know, immediately go to like a powerlifting meet. And it's really not that. It's just, it's the basic movement pattern that you're going to have to do. And, you know, that doesn't mean you need to be setting records every single time you go into a weight room by any stretch, but it's really just trying to build up the movement skills, one, in order to do the task, and then building a little bit of capacity on that. So when you encounter something in your job, you're able to perform with more skill and efficiency. So it's not necessarily about being at the pinnacle of fitness and performance, but having a requisite amount to do the job necessary without undue stress and fatigue.
I think you just said it way better than I said it.
I'm just the summary guy. That's what I do. So
I just tell people, you know what? Straight bar deadlift probably is not the optimal thing mm-hmm. for everyone, but should you be able to hex bar deadlift? Yeah. Should you be able to lift a sandbag off the ground or a 100-pound kettlebell? Yeah, you should. And that is hinging just like straight bar deadlifting.
Right. Well, and it's interesting you say that because honestly, most agencies that I do work with and consult with, I've got to the point now where I usually recommend the hex bar deadlift over a traditional one, just from a safety standpoint. I mean, especially if you have people that aren't familiar with that movement pattern. I think if you look at the center mass, it tends to stay over the base of support a little bit better athletic positions. And that's the thing is like in the weight room, we don't need to replicate everything you're going to do on the fire ground or in a situation, but to build that capacity so you can, in a lot of cases, learn how to do the right things from wrong positions, because we know it's not going to be necessarily clean if you're trying to pull somebody or, you know, extract them out of a car. But hopefully you have enough capacity so your strength level is great enough so you don't break as soon. And I think that's the one thing is like it's, you know, we know that you're going to have to do things on the job that aren't biomechanically correct. And that's part of the job, right? But if we can teach you the right things in the weight room and then help you adjust to those situations better, then hopefully that staves off that injury and, you know, prolongs your career. And I think, you know, probably even the bigger thing is, you know, hopefully everybody wants to, you know, have a nice retirement and actually enjoy that retirement and, you know, to try and keep them injury free and, you know, capable throughout the occupational lifespan is critical to enjoy life after that.
It is most definitely my greatest challenge because I tell the guys, I want you to live long and healthy and enjoy your retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so kind of going into the next section here, as far as kind of final thoughts and whatnot, changing the culture. So what if you are in a fire department at the moment where there's not really a strong culture in fitness, or, you know, there needs to be some changes made. What are some ways that that can be done?
You know what? That's super tough and also the million-dollar question. I think what happens most of the time is that the older people start to retire, and as the new people come in, you start changing the culture, i.e. we instituted morning workouts it was over 2 years ago now, and our new people coming in don't know the difference. That is the expectation that's been set since they were new. And so I have a feeling when I come back and visit 40 years from now, they'll still be doing it. But it's tough because, as my friend George Carvajal says, you don't need to be fit to do the fire service. You need to be fit to survive it. And unfortunately, oftentimes we don't find that out until too late.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of what I'm hearing is like really like from, you know, the trainee level up is really making an effort to change the culture. And, you know, and certainly that's not to say that, you know, people who have been doing this for 20, 30 years aren't invested in that. But I mean, a lot of times I think, you know, things have changed as far as where we place our values. And maybe if certain people don't, you know, ascribe to that, it's a challenge. I will say this, one of the challenges that we've had is with some of the younger recruits coming in and trainees is that, you know, fitness is not actually something that they've valued up until this point. And, you know, they're getting ready to enter into an occupation that's highly physically demanding and stressful. And, you know, they may not have the required physical skill sets to do the job at the level it needs to be done and stay healthy and safe. What do you do with those people other than recruit better?
Another million-dollar question. You're going to be rich.
That's our hope. Like we like fund the retirement plan here with all this, but you know, we'll take anything. So
I tell people that unfortunately you don't get better in the fire service. You only get worse in terms of your health and wellness. In terms of skills, yeah, you're going to get better at forcing a door. You're going to get better at extricating a patient. You're going to get better at doing drug calculations in your head. But in terms of health and wellness, it's not a kind career. So if you're starting out at 30% body fat as a male in the fire service, it's a recipe for disaster. But unfortunately, we don't have a screening process at this time that precludes those candidates.
Right.
And the other thing, I guess, to answer your question, like how do we change the culture? It has to start at the top, at the administrative level, because in order to have people effectively train, you have to give them time. And I talked about all of those things that are drawing time from us. But my administration actually actively said, we start at 7 o'clock in the morning. From 7:30 till 9 o'clock is your time to work out. You will do this, this, and then optional training. We're not going to schedule station tours or drills or anything until 9 o'clock. Almost without exception, that time is blacked out for us. Of course, if we get a call, we're going on the call. But just having that time available has made a huge difference.
Excellent. So also, I'm obviously here with Dr. Jill Joyce, the co-host. And, you know, one of the big things within the firehouse is nutrition. So do you want to go down that road? So what do you see there, and what are some of the challenges that you guys experience?
Well, from a consumer standpoint, being one of the people that is at the firehouse, you know, unfortunately, well, first, let me back up. I've been bringing my own food for probably a dozen years. And at first that went over very poorly because we are a family and we eat together on all of that stuff. But once the guys realized that this is my routine, this is what I do, and it's not this whole thing of what are you eating today? Oh, I'm out. What are you having today? Oh, I'm in. And I eat with them at the same time. I help them prepare their food. I set the table. I clean up. I do everything but eat their food actively. Mm-hmm. That for me has been a game changer. However, the public tends to love us and bring us donuts and cookies and cake and any other sort of garbage that you could think of. What'd you say, Jill?
Not a fruit basket, huh?
No. And I always say, where's the protein? Like, why doesn't anyone ever bring us lean protein? But so at Christmas, a family showed up with 36 giant donuts. I mean, wow. We're a station of five people. So that stuff is, it's prevalent in the firehouse. And so just getting that stuff off of their radar is super helpful, but also super challenging. And I love that you're working from that perspective, Jill.
Yeah. So, and Jill, so I guess like in your input, like what are things that you feel like could help that situation?
Well, there's, and we kind of talked a little before we started recording, but there are a couple ways that you can make, and it, some of it is what you've already done in it kind of individually, is that you need to focus on making fitness or healthy eating or any health behavior. It needs to become normal. It needs to become attractive or appealing, and it needs to become convenient. So you're exactly right. If you can get some of those unhealthy foods, and maybe not even, you know, don't go through and people get terrified when I come in. I'm going to raid the cupboards and, oh no, here she comes. I might put it on a top shelf, but I'm not going to come in and raid your cupboards. But if we make the healthy food easier to get to out on the counters in a really attractive way, and it becomes a normal thing, and the unhealthy food gets put way up in the closet, harder to reach, out of sight, out of mind, something that simple, I'm hoping to test that in some fire stations and some police stations. We haven't, I can't promise you that it's going to work, but it works really well in a school lunchroom, and kids have no idea they're eating an apple now instead of a cookie.
Well, I will volunteer Lyle Woodridge Station 55 as a test site for your research.
There you go. And so that is committed. That's pretty much as good as consent because it's recorded now. So I think we're solid. So
awesome.
So no, Annette, thank you so much for your time. Hey, real quick, can you tell the listeners again the name of your company? So if they want to get more information from you and, you know, see some of the other stuff you're doing. I mean, you're speaking all over the place and really highly sought after for what you do. Can you tell them how to access that information?
Absolutely. I have a website. It is www.fire, S as in Sam, Q as in Queen, fitness, Fire Rescue Fitness. And then I'm the same on Instagram and Twitter at Fire Rescue Fitness. And I'd love to have anyone reach out to me. I'm glad to talk to anyone.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks again for listening to the Oklahoma State University Tactical Fitness and Nutrition Podcast. For more information on improving health, fitness, and performance for first responders, just follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We look forward to you joining us again.